Man, I'm sorry about last show was like low energy, you know, and it's just because I just felt, I don't know, bombarded by several things going on at once. The move and the energy that it was sucking out of my life. But I just kind of twisted my perspective on things, and it really worked. And what I discovered was this: that in a relationship, it's composed of two types of people. One that asks indirect questions out loud to nobody, and one that answers that question. And that was me. So far as we gradually pieced together a semblance of some sort of functioning furniture and, you know, kind of a livable circumstance, it, for the moment, is actually quite nice. I like the simplicity. So I've been won over, and it began Wednesday morning, when I finally figured out how to get the gym. And the gym, I think I could live in that section. There's like a clubhouse or a community, the rec hall, or I don't know what you want to call it. It's got the gym with treadmills, weight room. There's a separate room for like Peloton looking bikes in front of a big flat screen, and then giant medicine balls, and then of course there's like showers, and then you go into another room and it's a big, there's like a kitchen or an island cabinet, and then a working kitchen with pool table or billiards, fireplace, another flat screen, another workstation. So it's, once I got in there and I was able to kind of look out through the big panel windows, where at any moment, you know, the Central Valley is just going to be socked in with its kind of holiday fog, or that, you know, that I don't know, it's like a Thule fog. It's just kind of a thing that kind of descends on the valley, and it just sits there on the highway. And although summer's still giving it a good fight, it's hanging in there. It's I could even out my tan today if I wanted to, but the gym kind of won me over. And and it's really kind of like, it's weird. It's kind of an interesting, like, mixed bag of tenants. It's a big, big facility. And then it's got its maintenance crew. And then there's guys that are just doing their I'm sure they've got a routine or a pattern of sorts, or like a, like they got a, like when I first, the other morning, trying to figure out how to break into the damn weight room there. I went by way of the pool, and then the gym itself looks out over the pool, the spa, and there's some homeless people, or I don't know, I assume they are, crashed on the outdoor couches, but the maintenance guys, I think, do a sweep. And they go through and just, if the people don't leave on their own volition, they get ushered or escorted on out. And then these maintenance guys, it must be like a route, you know, it's like a taxi driver, like just washing down all the funk in the back seat, right? Every shift, right? So, and then everybody just kind of comes and goes. And like I say, it's kind of a diverse crowd. people that look like they're good, well-to-do, or blue-collar, or white-collar, or a little, you know, like I say, a little bit of everything. So, it's, I have to say, like, so our little funky joint, our little funky bunch in our funky pad, it, we are gradually throughout the month just bringing bits and pieces over, bedding, furniture, crap, just closet stuff. And but in the meantime, it's taken on sort of a Japanese feel. It's very Japanese. Like, we sit on the ground, we sleep on the ground, and the only thing that's elevated is there's a, we got one little stand we put the tablet on, and then we watch our Seinfeld or whatever in the evenings at the end of the night. And we were watching Seinfeld last night, and George Costanza's the best. Like, okay, so the brilliance of Seinfeld is, like, and I'll stand by that. I've never saw, like, that show that Elaine was on after Seinfeld, Veep, where she played a president or vice president or whoever she was. Evidently, I think that had some success. Again, I don't know. I'm out of the loop. I don't watch any of that shit, right? And but aside from that, like, everything that those four did, succeeding that show or subsequent to that show, kind of didn't. I do kind of enjoy comedians getting coffee in cars, or the whatever that show is with that Seinfeld picks up comic actors and comedians and stuff in a vehicle that he considers well suited to his guest. That's a decent show. But again, it's not like, I don't know, nobody's really doing backflips or that one. But aside from that, like, that four, those four, like, that show had such a, I don't know, I mean, that was early 90s. That was like 90, 91, 92, 93, 94. And it's still, like, I mean, 30 years ago. And it's still kind of like, I can fuck with it still, right? And but aside from that, those guys, nothing else they ever did prior or subsequent to that show was any good. Like, it's just their chemistry. Because, like, Kramer was in some other stuff. He was in, like, that movie UHF, which is a Weird Al Yankovic. Again, yeah, exactly. What? Who? Where? Exactly. He was in Transylvania 65,000 again. Yes. Right? Huh? Who? What? With Jeff Goldblum and what's the other guy? The guy that was in Pineapple Express, Ed Begley Jr. Of all people, like, this motherfucker. Those two were in Transylvania 65,000, and so was Kramer. Again, who saw that movie? Nobody. But there's something about that show. Anyway, so we watched that on our iPad, and that's about it. It's kind of like, it's just something to kind of hook into and then just nod off to and go to sleep. And, but Costanza, what a brilliant character that is, right? And I don't think it's anything like the guy Jason Alexander, but he just fucking nails that character. But he was seeing this woman who he had convinced her that he was funnier than his friends, because she, you know, he had made her laugh and was entertaining her to a point where he felt like there was a connection that was made. And then he made Jerry and Elaine act real depressed and somber, So that, again, it made him look better. It made him look better. And then, but ultimately the woman ended up falling for Jerry because she saw him as so deeply disturbing and kind of dark. Because he really played into, he really leaned into the whole existential angst of life. And she's like, he's telling her like, you know, what difference does it make? You know, we're all just kind of on this ride that it all ends the same way. And she's like, wow, you're really deep and dark. And what do you do for a living? He goes, I'm a comedian. But anyway, so she ends up falling for Jerry, and Costanza, he basically like lifts the veil off the whole scenario and says, oh, I was just making them act that way. I'm actually the one, the deeply disturbed and demented and depressed one. I'm the one that had them do that. That's how disturbed I am, is I had them act like they were depressed and disturbed. And anyway, it didn't work. It blew up in his face, but he's like, he goes, what did he say? He goes, I'm dark and I'm deeply disturbed and I'm demented. I got it all. But that's kind of where I'm coming from on this, this new place, this apartment. Because I wasn't receiving it quite as openly as I could have. But I really got turned around on it, and what it really did is it kind of shone a light on kind of like how, how kind of set in my ways that I could be, because I have this real built-in ineptitude to me, right? Like I'll kind of, that's my thing, is like I can be kind of deep and dark and disturbing and demented and distressed and depressed, but in all actuality it's more about ineptitude. Like I'll be dismissive. That's really the best probably all-encompassing description of things for me, is to be dismissive with things. Very dismissive. So I'll immediately dismiss the notion that, oh, we don't need to move, we don't need to do this, or, you know, like it goes way back to even like when I was married, or even like right before I got married to my ex-wife. I remember she brought home, this is when you were renting movies, or you were renting, you could get, shoot, I don't think, was Netflix even a thing then? This was back in 99. Anyway, she brought this movie home. It must have been a VHS. I don't know. I can't remember. DVD. And it was Office Space. I'm like, what is this? What is this nonsense? And it went, and I didn't think, you know, pretentious, dismissive me, I'm like, this isn't a culturally empowering foreign language film. This is Office Space. And well, it turns out it was a funny movie. It's a really good, it's a classic. That's a classic. And every time like my 21-year-old calls, or I call her, or she calls me, you know, I'll ask her how she works this job. She does research. They keep moving her desk further and further away. And I tell her about Office Space. Like, there's this guy, you got to see this movie, Office Space. I tell her, there's this guy in the movie. They just keep moving further and further away. He'd actually been let go like several years earlier, and nobody told him, and he keeps getting checks, but he's a non-functioning member of the company. They just, so they want to kind of eradicate him, but they really just are physically just moving him further and further away till he ends up down in the basement, like in the, like where like the, where like the circuit box is and shit like that. So it makes me think when she tells me about how they keep moving her desk, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely office space. But that's my example of me being dismissive. Just, oh, what is this movie? I'm not watching this crap. And then it turns out to be great. I'm always wrong. Right? And so it's kind of an ineptitude. It's kind of a dismissiveness. All wrapped up in one. But what I'm finding out is that, Jesus, I just did the math too. And see, when I get done at the end of the night from picking up donations, I still have a 30-minute drive home to Roseville. And it's only about 10 miles. But I was doing the calculations, and the calculation was that if I'm driving X amount of a day, 150 to 200 miles a day, 10 of the, just only 10 of that is the end of the day leaving Mather after the end of my obligations. And I've just eliminated that. And if you work 350 days out of 365, which I do, I would conservatively say that's the case. I mean, I'm 24/7 almost. And but I do, you know, I think in the course of the year I've, with trips and various holidays here or random days off, I could safely say I work at least 350 days. Well, times that by 10, the 10 miles that it takes me to get back to Roseville at the end of the day, that's 3,500 miles. I just took 3,500 miles off my yearly totals now, my yearly driving totals. And honestly, you could almost say it's 7,000 because the drive in, but I don't always drive straight in. Typically, sometimes I'm just going straight to the donor center from the house or whatever. But still, Jesus Christ, at the very minimum, 35, I just took 3,500 miles off. I mean, most people don't drive 3,500 miles in a year. And, I cover that just on my way home from work, which is, I don't know, what's my buddy Mike do? If he's doing 100 miles round trip, 250 days a week, that's 2,500. No, that's 25,000. Jesus. That's his commute's 20. Oh, yeah, that's his whole commute, though. Anyway, whatever. So, I mean, it's already saving me money. I mean, I've blown through two cars, two engines. I've literally blown through two engines in two cars. Like, I'm just leaving like this kind of, just this trail of kind of destruction decadence and depravity behind me. But a way I see it too it's just me giving in to the situation. It's like that old that saying that the rising tide lifts all the boats. So just let it lift you. Don't be contrarian just for the sake of being contrarian. Although I don't I don't think I was. But. Anyway, I just got to mellow out. It just comes down. And the big difference, too, what I did notice, Jesus, is that I have to mellow out. Like, I have to, the workout definitely, it definitely is something that calms me down. If I don't do it, it ramps me up because... I could get real testy, but I'm not. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to face each situation in the most beneficial way possible. The most mutually beneficial way possible. So, I'm enjoying things. It seems to be, you know, and that's what you find out too, is if you give in to the situation and maybe show some contrition or show some, yeah, I guess is that right? Contrition? Is that the right word? Is that the right word here? Let me see what I got going on. Contrition. Yeah. That's exactly what. Yeah. Feeling remorseful and penitent. That's what if you show a little contrition, you'll notice, at least I notice, things get better. Good things happen all the time. Do 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 do. And so that's, I don't know. So there you go. So that's what's up. So what's what else you got? What? How are you guys doing? That's the real question. How are you guys doing? Did you get that paperwork taken care of? Did you get that thing at the DMV? Or were you able to kind of cobble it all together and just do it all in one round and one shot? Or did you have to wait in line? Or do you go to AAA where they let you take care of certain DMV situations without waiting in line with all those other scum of the earth? did you get the lawn mowed? Did you get the leaves mulched up, or did you just mow over them and just kind of call it a mulch job? Or did you rake and then mow, or did you just kind of sell the notion to your spouse that if you just mow the leaves, it really turns into a mulch and it's very good for the fertilizer, or because you're out of garbage bags, or you just can't handle that rake, the plastic one, where it's got a couple of teeth missing, it's got a couple of busted chiclets, you know, and it just doesn't do, you know, you're just kind of, you're raking, but it's only grabbing like the right side of shit, you know what I mean. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. It's November. I think I'm easing into the notion that Thanksgiving is almost here, and then I got a text from my ex-mother-in-law asking if I could bring a pie. And I said, I'll bring a couple of pies. And because there's going to be like 25 people. And so my lady doesn't listen to this show, right? I don't know why. I think she doesn't. I don't know. Secretly, I don't think she likes me. But so it's, I can safely say there's going to be like 25 people at this thing. Which if she knew that, I think that would that would probably discourage her from going and getting excited about it. And, but I'm ready, man. I'm into, like, full-on social chaos. Like, the crazier, goofier, the better. And this is, like, we're walking into, like, Lib Central. And I love that shit. Because I'm kind of, if I had a tendency to lean in one direction, there it would be definitely, certainly more liberal than conservative. And I don't, just because, I don't know, because I can't, I try and be semi non-reactive. I try not to be invested emotionally in things, but I see, like, you know, when I see homeless and stuff like that, man, it's hard. Particularly, like, the real extreme cases that are, like, you can tell that, like, they're physically burdened, that they've been out, they've been exposed. Not the ones that are, like, milking the system at the stoplight, right? That have an iPhone and a pedicure, you know? Like, that's disturbing. But I also am not, I'm not what you would call woke, right? I don't really lean into the culture wars as heavily, say, as, like, the Rogans and the Chris Williamsons and those guys. But this is going to be two dozen of the woke type, I think. Kinda. I don't know. Some of the, like, I saw this Instagram meme, it said, or it's a reel, or a lady was going off yelling at some person. I guess they were wearing a shirt that said, I guess the title of the meme or the reel was, like, you know, I'm woke too or something. And the shirt they were wearing, it said, or no, I think the shirt said, I'm woke too, or no, the shirt said, I use pronouns too. Let me she them titties. And then the rest of the reel was just some irate woke female just yelling at them that you can't wear shirts like that. I use pronouns too. Let me she them titties. And so where we're going is a place where you probably wouldn't want to wear that shirt. So I go in, I'm like a spy in there because they think I'm one of them. And I'm really not. I just enjoy kind of this, I don't know, like, the back of my head, my perspective on things and situations like that is, like, that none of you will ever know my real motives. I'm just here enjoying it. And I do enjoy, I get a kick out of everybody. From the ultra extra conservative to the ultra extra libs and the wokest of the woke, they crack me up. That shit's funnier than fuck, you know? So, you know, if you don't like abortions, don't get one, right? If you don't like guns, don't buy one, right? All that shit cracks me up, you know? I almost prefer, it's like, that's how the, you know, the car business is something that is similar in that vein, where if you get one of those kind of seemingly disgruntled types, you know, the walk on the lot, they just don't want to be bothered. They don't want to talk to him, but, like, they don't even want to talk. Like, if those are they're the challenge, and it is a challenge, but once you break them, once you bust them in the nose and get them to relax a little, like, that's, it's usually always a deal. And they're usually the nice, they're usually the nicest people. The people that, I don't know, it's such a weird dynamic, but the people that, yeah, that really put up a real wall or an obstacle, you know, a seemingly kind of insurmountable kind of facade. Once you break that facade, they really, there's a different kind of respect there now. Like, they really enjoy your company. You enjoy their company. Because you get through the bullshit. That facade's all bullshit. All this stuff is a bullshit. Everything's bullshit, man. Everything's bullshit, man. You heard what I said? Everything's bullshit. This world's bullshit, man. So, but I hope you guys are doing well. I was going to ramble on about a bunch of stuff. Like, you know, I was listening to Chris Williamson on the way down. I was taking some blood down to Modesto, and I was listening to Chris Williamson's podcast. He was talking to Patrick Bet-David, the Iranian-born, Iranian/American businessman, entrepreneur, podcast show host. He's a badass. I will say that. He gets to the point. He doesn't mince words. But they were talking about how people, and I was kind of drone on about how we have been fortunate in our lifetime, in this decade, or in this generation anyway, to see the greats, like, of each sport, aside from, say, I would say the only one that we didn't have the privilege of seeing would be, like, Babe Ruth in baseball. But we've seen all the greats in all the other sports, like, you know, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Mike Tyson, Wayne Gretzky. Would he be? I mean, they called him the great one. He was, so anyway, this guy, Patrick Bet-David, he was talking about how people in roles like that, the great, how they get to that point, the greatness comes from kind of a twofold situation. So growing up, they had one side of unconditional love, which is typically like your mom, more times than not. You know, it's like whatever you do, whatever kind of fuck up you are, whatever kind of drain on society, whatever kind of fucking epic fuck, like, trust me, I've been there. There's that you know, you'll always be loved, even though, you know, that figure, that parental figure, that parent recognizes your fuck up. You're fuck up and fuck up this. But then the other side is the parental unit or authority figure that you will never really impress. You can't please. And I don't put myself in those terms. I don't put myself in that discussion, but I did see. At the dinner table, if I could get my mom, if I get my mom laughing, I'm good. You just gotta, whatever half-baked, goofy-ass little charade I'd put on during the dinner, my dad would try and shut it down. He was like the police in the 68 Democratic Convention in Chicago, just, you know, trying to shut things down, hit them with tear gas, run the hoses, get the billy club, shut it down, right? Don't encourage him. But once my mom got laughing, I could get the rest of them going, you know. And it just, once my mom bought in and invested, then it was a quick erosion of everyone else's values at the table. So that was but it made sense. And that's how these, so there's like two roles at play here, which I think that was very astute of him to point out, is like, you'll always be loved, but you'll never be completely satiated in your fulfillment of your objective, because there's always that one entity that doesn't deem you good enough. It's not good enough. You got to do better, right? Like Tiger Woods' dad used to just tell him the worst shit, the most racist shit, right? And that he had to rise above that, right? Excuse me. And I don't know where Brady gets it. That guy's intense though, because both his parents seem like really cool. Like his mom seems like super like you know, you got to give it up for her. I mean, she's been fighting cancer. You know, he's very emotional about it. And his dad just looks like just the coolest fucking insurance. You know, he looks like a guy that owned like a State Farm insurance office, like. You know, and he was just like the nicest guy. Hey, come on in. Check out my new golf clubs or something, you know. So I don't know where Brady gets that intent. I think it's the chip. These guys all have a chip on their shoulder, you know. Mike Tyson just came from the streets, you know. Just no love until his trainer found him when he was like 13 or something. But these guys all play with chips on their shoulder, you know. Jordan, Tiger, Brady, I think is just that, you know, he just felt slighted a lot. He just felt slighted all the time. He was the consummate backup, you know. Other than say high school, he was pretty well regarded in high school. He was a top prospect. I don't know why he didn't end up. Where did he? He ended up going to Michigan, but I don't think that was his first. I don't think that's where he originally. But in Michigan, he was a backup to what was his name, Drew Henson, who was like a two-sport talent. So it was always, yeah. And then Brady came in. When Brady came into the league, he was the backup to Drew Bledsoe, which is why I was a Patriots fan. I like Drew Bledsoe. So it was always, he was always trying to prove himself, and he must have kind of captured that in a bottle, you know, that chip on your shoulder. You're constantly feeling like you need, and you know, he was I'll tell you this too. Up until like the last few years, he was never really even regarded as like a marquee quarterback, like an elite. You know, he was always kind of in the shadows of Peyton Manning, even though he just skull fucked him repeatedly at the AFC championships each year, except for one year. And but he, you know, he always felt like he was getting slighted, and that's probably where it came from. It's always a, you know, it's a matter of perspective, right? Like your day can get really cool just by shifting your perspective. The same day you've been the same place, the same layout, the same points of interest, the same bullet points, the same duties, the same obligations each day. The same thing you consider as the drudgery of your day can, just with a shifting of perspective, can turn into like the most intense day if you figure out how to kind of mind fuck yourself a little. And that's what those guys are doing. But I went down kind of a tangent there. I was gonna talk about like how like how Costanza being like this, you know, saying he was deeply disturbed and dark and depressed. And I got it all, the three D's, the triple D's, deeply, darkly disturbed and depressed. I was gonna equate that somehow to like Krzysztof Kozlowski, the late great Polish director Krzysztof Kozlowski's Three Colors trilogy that he made for finance with French money, because each color, white, red, blue, represented a color portion of the French flag and each color portion of the French flag, it had always been bandied about, I guess. I don't know if it can be completely corroborated, but each color in the French flag means liberty, fraternity, equality. And so each theme of the Three Colors trilogy that Kozlowski did with three great actresses, Juliette Binoche, Irene Jacobs, and Julie Delpy. Gosh, three great French actresses. All had some kind of comparable thing. I don't know. It might have just been Kozlowski said himself, like, you know, I chose those three because French financed the movie. Like, there's like, if you really need to go, it's not as artistic as it may seem, but that's where the motivation came from. So each movie, so Three Colors White, had something to do on parallel with liberty. Three Colors Red would have something on par with fraternity, brotherhood. And Three Colors Blue would be equality. So my three color trilogy, my theme would be ineptitude, dismissiveness, and perspective. I guess. But again, that's all conjecture. That's all hearsay. That's all artistic ambiguity. It's what you want to make of it. So ultimately probably doesn't mean anything. So anyway, enjoy the rest of your day. I hope you like this. I hope you, I hope it wasn't as pretentious as it sounds. And I'll talk at you later. Arrivederci, babies.